The song. I know we say it every time, but the song is what I need to wake up at this time of the day. Every day. Hi, y'all. We are back for 8-Bits. I'm Chloe Condon, one of your co-hosts here. And of course, we have Brandon Minnick here, as always. How you doing, Brandon?
Chloe, good to see you again. I am good. I've been playing around with Reddit this week.
Okay, tell me more. And I only recently started using Reddit in the last 2 years, but I am very obsessed.
Well, so to be clear, I'm not just sitting around playing on Reddit, sure. But actually exploring Reddit's APIs and trying to build some reporting tools. It's selfish. It's to help me out. But I'm on Reddit and I like to hang out in the developer community. So I'm all about the C# subreddit, .NET subreddit, Xamarin Developers subreddit, and love it, but wanted to kind of build a dashboard where I could see everything in one place. And so started playing around with the Reddit APIs, and turns out you can pull all that data. You can pull it all for yourself. You can pull it all for other users. You can aggregate it together. I've been playing around with that, and I'll be showing it off to you soon, Chloe. So keep an eye out for it.
Fun. I think, haven't we had Becca Rosenthal on the show? Reddit employee Becca Rosenthal? Some of the early episodes, yeah. I think. We'll have to get her back on, talk about the Reddit API. I'm sure she has a lot of thoughts.
Show her my tool, see what she thinks. Because, for me, it's like, I love hanging out in these different subreddits. I learn a lot and I try to share a lot. But, I've always been curious. Are there trends, right? Like if I share something in this subreddit versus this subreddit, because some are kind of the same, some are kind of similar, or so like what gets traction, what doesn't, where can I best engage with the developer community? So stay tuned. I'll be showing that off to you hopefully later today.
I'm totally paying attention. I'm just trying to ask you what your favorite wholesome subreddit is. But I needed to figure out mine, which I think is I've been a big fan of r/dad-like reflexes. It's not even just dads. It's just people like catching something before it falls or a baby's about to like fall off the couch or something. And it's brought me a lot of joy in my life to just watch people have dad-like reflexes.
There's r/aw. I forgot how many W's. A-W-W-W? That's always a good one. But
let's see. Yeah. What else do I like? I also I've got Animal Crossing design to get inspiration for my island. Oh, absolute units. It's all just absolute unit of a cat, absolute unit of a bear. But yesterday, someone posted, I think they ordered a pizza from Domino's, but they were out of the cheese that they put inside the crust. So they gave them extra cheese. So it was absolute unit of a cheese pizza where it was like a cheese pizza.
Oh, gosh.
2 inches of cheese. The dream.
It's like a deep dish, but not a deep dish.
Exactly. So, Brandon, I thought of you, somewhat related. I saw that Britney Spears is in Maui, and I was like, what's going on with Maui? I bet Brandon's got some updates.
Down at Maui? What? Team's still working on it. I'm working on it, a couple tools myself for it, but I'm still chucking towards the November release date. It's available in preview right now, although with .NET Maui, it's a work in progress. So the previews of .NET Maui right now are, here's what the team's gotten done so far. So if you want to try it out, play around with it, you totally can. But I'm not converting my apps to .NET Maui just yet, because literally the team's not done building it. It's it'd be like trying to race a car with a wheel missing. So there's still some UI controls they're still working on building and optimizing, but I can't wait. I saw
that cool merch, that t-shirt that our
pod
Jeremy Sinclair was wearing.
Yeah, those are awesome. I'm going back to a conference, so I'll be at That conference. It's literally called That Conference. It's one of my favorites.
I think this is a full circle moment, because I feel like we talked about this conference on some of our very early episodes. I think when we first met, Brandon, you were about to go to That Conf.
Maybe.
Your first one.
I've spoken at it 3 times, so this will be my 4th. But yeah, it's one of my favorite conferences. One of my favorite parts is they focus so much more on the wellness and the wholeness of the developer. So it's not just tech talks. I mean, granted, I'll be giving a talk on .NET MAUI, but there's talks on mental wellness. They encourage you to bring your families. So as part of the speaker registration, they ask you how many family members are you bringing. And they have tracks and courses and workshops that aren't necessarily tech related, but for families. So like children can hang out and have fun, and even younger speakers. So I remember the first time, I ever checked in, I was waiting in line at my speaker check-in, and right in front of me was a 10-year-old who was giving a talk the next day. So really, really, really good conference. It's also online this year. So highly recommend it. Check it out. That.us.
I've heard so many amazing things about that conference from you, from our coworker Cassie. I think Seth spoke there maybe 2 years ago. I have a lot of FOMO. Wait, are you going physically to it?
That's the plan. I talked with our managers and made sure we had budget, made sure everything was okay. And I just got the thumbs up. So I booked plane tickets again. I booked hotels again and rental cars. It's weird.
Wow. What a time to
be in a good way.
Nature is healing. Nature is healing. We're going back to events. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Right.
Well, I just got done with an event this morning. I was up bright and early. 9 a.m. We started the Static Web Apps Conference. Maybe let us know in the chat. Are you still here? Maybe you left a tab open and now you're joining us after Static Web Apps Conference. It was super fun. I got to host it. John Papa was the keynote speaker. And truly, you know, I mentioned this on the stream for the conference, but it's rare during the pandemic that I have the attention span to just like sit down and watch every talk back to back. But I got to watch all of them, y'all, and they're all really great. I learned a lot. We talked about GeoCities. We talked about Angel Fire. We talked about Flash animation. I, of course, talked about the first website I ever visited, the 101 Dalmatians live action marketing page featuring Glenn Close. It was a good time had by all. You can check out all of the previous talks at aka.ms/swaconf on demand. It was a great time. I learned a lot. Talking about Jamstack, we're talking about the CLI, we're talking about all sorts of different ways that you can use static web apps, DevOps. Oh my gosh, covered all the things. My brain's very full. So if I'm kind of like zoning out, I'm probably thinking about static web apps.
But can you define a static web app in one sentence or less?
Very cool. No. Static web apps in general, with Azure, obviously, there's a bunch of different awesome plugins and integrations that we have and extensions with VS Code that make them a lot easier. But it's just a single, simple web page, basically. And it's really cool. What I really loved about this conference was, you know, typically you do an event and you're talking about the deeply, deeply technical things, and that's all fun, right? Like, we love to get into the code. But what was cool was how many conversations were being had about, hey, static web apps not only are this super useful, like, thing that you can get up and running quickly, but it enables other people who don't have those deep technical skills to also get things online, you know, your crochet knitting site for your grandma, you know, a theater company website, things that require a lot less deep, deep coding and building. So it's exciting. It's making the web more accessible for other people. And I'm really excited to see our dear friend Brian Benz, a friend of the pod, our other two-part guest, other than our guest today, is going to be talking tomorrow, I think in the evening at 11 p.m. Pacific time with Burke Holland, all about all of the new features that were just announced, because it's all generally available right now. So check that out. Burke is so fun to watch, y'all. I mean, I'm going to probably stay up late and watch that one. Favorite coworkers. I'm so static right now. You see, my hair is just like static.
that's what I always think of. I was thinking of
Rocco's Modern Life, Static Cling, the newest revamp of Rocco's Modern Life. That I somehow managed to not reference during that conference. How did that happen? Well, Brandon, anything else you want to say before we bring in part 2 of one of our favorite guests?
Oh, we gotta bring her in, because last time we didn't even come close to finishing the interview. So but I don't want to lose any more time.
I secretly kind of, like, once we got to like the 3/4 mark, I was like, oh, this is great. We have to bring them back. So I'm back. Very excited. Welcome back to the show for part 2, Katie. Woo!
Katie, welcome back.
Oh, you know what? I love a sequel. You know,
the squeak wall, if you will.
Katie, right. Two farmer. That's what they call me.
Katie, how was your week then? We haven't seen you for a full week. How are you?
Oh, in that week, I think I'm probably changed forever. But also, I did nothing, and it was fantastic. I just spent a lot of time with my dogs, looking at squirrels, and thinking about how to get squirrel, how to be next to squirrel. You know. All the hard questions.
What to do when you catch squirrel?
Yeah. Yes. What to do?
That's my dog's biggest problem.
The squirrels are bullies. Okay. Those squirrels are taunting my poor dogs. They know what they're doing.
So for anybody who is just joining us on this episode, we'll do a little throwback. We should have done like a montage previously on 8-Bits. Katie, tell the lovely humans tuning in who you are, what you do, and a little bit about yourself.
I am Katie. I am the technical community manager, to be specific, at Circle CI. I was a late career changer. I went to school for music and then for literature and then worked as an editor for many years and then thought, boy, money would be sure nice. And then I got into tech. I went to a boot camp. I did all the things that you're supposed to do to become a successful girl boss. I'm mad that I said it. I was going to say it sarcastically like a joke, but then it just came out real and I didn't know how to fix it.
So I prefer the term business ma'am.
Business ma'am, I do. Ooh, like.
I like that.
I also have a shirt that says I'm a professional, which really encapsulates my idea of business casual.
For anybody listening to the podcast, I am wearing a hat today that says I love meeting. And I feel like you need to wear this hat with that shirt.
Yeah. Today's shirt. Also for the people who are at home, it says, ugh.
A mood, an yeah. Absolute mood. So you were here last week and we covered a lot of the origin story of Katie. Brandon, let's try to recap together. Let's tag team this. Ooh. I feel like we started with nary a computer in Katie's home growing up. No. That's computer.
Right. Try and find one.
Talked about band. Music, specifically playing in the high school band and the trumpet. What else do we talk about, Brandon? We talk about a lot of stuff.
Working in IT.
Yes.
Right. And I was in college, right?
Yep.
So even though you weren't studying computers, IT, anything like that.
Nope.
You worked in IT. So your first job.
Just started beep booping. See what
was up. It's just. She was the one turning everything off and turning it back on again, and it fixes it every time.
Really does.
Wait, did we talk about, like, how you got onboarded for that job, though? Like, was it literally, like, type? I mean, you had used a keyboard, I assume.
I was
what
really
was
good
like?
At typing.
Okay.
That was, I would say that's my main skill when it comes to computers. I can type so good. Most of that was, so I started during the summer, like semester. So it was like a little bit slower and basically I had to stayed in the shop as it were, and watched all the other technicians solve problems and just learned by just kind of being apprenticing sort of, you know, just, I was definitely the only, femme of any kind, it was, and I was also shorter than everyone by about a foot and a half. And when we would have to, yeah, I'm small.
But that's useful to like crawl under desks to plug things in and unplug things. I've found personally as a 5-foot.
Yes. We would have to walk across campus and I would be walking with some of the other technicians and they're walking and I'm like literally jogging next to them. Like, slow down. But yeah, it was just a lot of like watch and learn. And again, in that like scenario of like at the university, the computers are very much you know, they have like ghost images. You just reset them if bad things happen. So it was an easier environment to learn in, I think, because there's just like one way that it should be there. Like, this is how Windows should be set up, period, on this campus.
Yeah.
So that made it a little easier. But then later on, I became a manager of the help desk, and things got complicated again, because I started figuring out that while I very well could learn computers, I have always been good with people. And that's the thing that's the bridge that's often missing, right? Is like, yeah, I know how I figured out how this computer works, but I still have to be able to tell this person with a PhD in music theory or biology or calculus or whatever, like, how to get into their email. And that's a different skill altogether.
I have very difficult. A question for you. We asked this to Brian, or no, this was to Carmen, I believe. He used to work at the Microsoft customer support help desk. And he said one of his favorite customer support questions or requests was someone thinking there was a wizardry in their computer because of the Microsoft download wizard, I think, and wanted to get the occult out of their Windows. Do you have any favorite help desk stories, Katie?
I mean, I have so many, but my favorite one was this like staff member called all the time, and they always had problems with their computer. They were always like, it's slow, it's freezing. They always had a virus, just always. And I had reset her machine so many times that I was like, you know what? Let me just come on over and like see what's up and like spend a little time with you on your computer. And when I got there, they were on their computer, like, you know, in a very traditional way for people who, you know, a lot of people keep things are on the desktop, you know, like however many documents and files. And so the desktop is like completely covered. It's real hard to find anything. And then I'm like trying to look for the mouse among the sea of like icons. And the mouse is like, instead of the cursor on the screen, it's like the little cat that like walks.
I am guilty of adding that. I think like back in the day that was super popular on GeoCities and Angel Fire.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure on my live journal, I had like a little Pikachu cursor.
Yeah. It was just like, she kept downloading these like cat cursors. They were from this like random website because she was just searching for them. And I was like, listen, you have to stop downloading these. They're giving you like, stop getting this.
I feel we have a comment here from Aaron Aldrich that says, sometimes I really miss direct help desk / support work. And I used to work in VIP video game support. And I truly think that every developer at some point in their life should have to work in a support and help desk, because it's humbling and you also get a lot of empathy. Well, you also start to understand the importance of product feedback. Like, you're right there in the trenches. I truly, we should all be doing customer support help desk like once a week as far as I'm concerned.
It's
not a bad
like,
idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a fast way to learn. Right. And like, I remember, I mean, that was like my returning client. You know, I think I helped that person like once or twice a week for a while, like somewhere in the middle. It was a lot. But my favorite one, kind of, I don't know, I think there's something about it that relates to tech, but like a lot of people who work in universities, who I'm sure if anyone like watching has worked in academia at all, it can be a very, it's a tough place. People who have PhDs and are professors can be a little full of themselves sometimes, because they're good at what they do. And when they're not good at something like that feels simple to them, they are angry. And I just remember like talking to this professor over the phone for like a really long time. Like they were really upset. They had grades to turn in and their computer wouldn't turn on. And it was like, all right, well, like, do you see a power light? And like, do you check the cables and like all the things? And they were just like, they'd had enough of me trying to help them. They were like, just come over here and just fix it. And I was like, eventually I was like, all right, I'm going to come over there. And then, you know, the first thing I do is I like check the power light. It's not on. And then I check the cables, and then I'm like following the cables. And I was like, okay, have some news that you're not going to like. which is that you are correct that all the cables are plugged in. They were all plugged into a power strip, but the power strip was also plugged into the power strip.
Oh, no.
Yes, it
doesn't give you infinite power?
It was
loops the power back on itself?
This beautiful moment, because at the time, you know, I was probably like 20. And I can't imagine that as, you know, this person who's very good at their expertise, it's just real hard to have people be like, you plugged it in wrong. That's a hard pill to swallow, you know?
Brandon, do you have any tales from the help desk?
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, I worked in IT support as an intern at Disney. So we didn't necessarily handle the hardware like that, but yeah, I remember. So we supported the website, and yeah, all the time people would reach out and say something like the website's down or it's not working. I'm trying to remember an exact scenario, but just in general, yeah, like everybody was always mad. Everybody's always upset at us, at me. It was my fault. And yeah, similar to Katie's story, most of the time is the user's fault. I mean, yeah, some of that feedback can be taken and we could do things better, make the button bigger. But yeah, people would like if a list shuffled, like we maybe reorganized things on a page and something wasn't in the exact same spot where it used to be, we could help desk tickets about the website being broken. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, I'm literally on it right now and it's working. And they're like, nope, it's not there anymore. It's like, oh, did you scroll down? Just scroll down a little bit. You got it. Yeah. but yeah, it's always IT's fault. It's always the help desk's fault. And you kind of learn like,
calls to say thank you. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're always starting off pretty, like, decently irritated and then just like going from there.
Right. And you just got to take it. Like, once you get off the call, then you can vent to your coworkers and be like, oh, it happened again where somebody thought the website was broken and it wasn't. But when you're on the call, it's like, yeah, I'm so sorry. Yep. You're absolutely right. That button used to be there and now it's not.
Yes.
It's just a little bit lower, but we'll look into it.
I think the years I put in support, I think probably attributed to my being able to like be successful once I moved into tech, just because I was used to like, yeah, I worked on a lot of customer service. I worked retail, like places where people are just like, they're not that nice to you because they don't have to be, or because they're already starting off with a problem once they come find you. Right. Like they're not coming to hang out with you because they already have everything they need. So I think that like when I got into tech and you like, again, the bar is like very low, but I definitely like feel like being able to like listen and bring people down from that edge and like, you know, have a full conversation is all nice.
My customer support experience, I think, was a unique one because I worked in video game customer support. So I was dealing with very angry, mostly men who were very upset about not getting their gold because like that was the reward system within this game. So, and luckily we only used email customer support. This was like maybe like 10 years ago. And all of the subject lines would be like, my gold, I need my gold, bring me my gold. And I learned a lot about logs, not like wooden logs, but like chat logs when I worked in that role. And I learned from a lot of people who were like, why am I banned? Why am I banned? I didn't say anything bad. That people really try to cover up that they have not said really terrible things that they actually have. So shout out to moderation tools. check out Microsoft's awesome content moderation tools out there. But yeah, I feel like it's interesting that you guys actually worked in like physical IT customer support or things that actually existed, because doing customer support for imaginary war commander bases and imaginary gold is a whole thing to wrap your head around when you're like, I serve these people. Like I help them with their fake bases that they've spent a lot of money on creating in this, you know, spot in the internet on a server somewhere. But yeah, you really learn a lot about like how to deal with people, how to communicate with people. The customer is always right, as I learned from retail and from doing video game customer support. And yeah, I see a lot of that in you, Katie, because I feel like a lot of your tweets, which we're definitely going to talk about today, are very positive and uplifting. And when I'm going through my day and I see your tweets in my feed, it brings joy to my life. I feel like I needed these tweets when I would take breaks as a customer support agent and be like, you know what? I can do it. So, okay, we chatted last time all about your journey to your boot camp. And I think we ended around talking about how you chose, we had a question in the chat about how to choose your boot camp. We've talked about this a little bit on the show before of not all boot camps are created equally. Just like any university or school, you're going to want to vet the information about the program, see what stack they're using. How did you end up choosing your boot camp, Katie?
Great question, Chloe. I think it's like, I just want to kind of make it clear that it's really hard, especially because you know nothing about the subject, and yet you are trying to look for a place that is like theoretically the expert, right? Then you're like, well, I don't really know what the criteria is for being good. So I guess, and I was very lucky that I had programmers like in my life who could weigh in, and they did extensively about like the various boot camps. And so there, I mean, now there's a lot more options. Even at the time I lived in Denver, and there's an in-person school there called Turing. And I knew I needed to be in a classroom setting, like physically, because I knew that if I could learn online, I would have. Although I know that they there's differences with like curriculum and stuff, but online learning is like, it's not for me. I need a teacher in front of me.
I am the same way. Shout out to PJ Metz, who was self-taught, but I need accountability in my life as well.
Yeah. And yeah. Honestly, like I went to like, you know, the schools usually have like open houses and like always go to those. And honestly, like if no one tells you anything bad about the school, don't go to it, because that means there are many secrets. Because everyone I know who's gone to a boot camp has pretty complex opinions about them. Because that none of them are perfect, right? Like sometimes it's cultural. Sometimes the cost is like enormous. And I think, especially when you're choosing one, like make sure you understand what the range of like tuition costs is, because some of them are a lot more than other ones. Like I think a lot of them sit right around 20,000, which
is an interesting trend of tuition deferment, like not having to pay until you get a job and taking a certain percentage. So thinking through those things, like where am I at financially? I mean, I always say no one ever just wakes up one morning and is like, you know what? I'm going to go do a boot camp and change my career. I think we said this on the last episode, yeah. Right? That like usually people who are making a career change either have had a huge existential crisis about their life and career, like me. They need to make more money. They want to have more security in their life. It's a big, big financial, also life decision. Most of these programs are full time. But truly it's, I always say people, if you hear someone has graduated from a boot camp, just assume that they've seen it. They can live through anything.
Yes. And there's like even more like, I mean, I didn't grow up with any kind of like financial literacy. And so even the idea of being like adding, you know, like getting another loan, I'm like, well, I have these student loans, and so I'll just put this loan with these other loans, right? Which like in my mind sounded fine. But then it's like, well, actually, this is a different type of loan. I can't pay this private loan back like I can my federal school loans and stuff like that. So just like the best thing to do is to just ask as many people who've gone to that school as you can. Whoever will talk to you, reach out to absolutely everyone. Some of them will get back to you. Like that's just really throw it all out there, because they'll all be able to tell you. Like I said, and they'll, if they don't have critiques, then like honestly, I do find that a bit suspicious, mostly either because sometimes the schools are, you know, might have ways to convince people that they shouldn't be talking about whatever it is. Like, I'm more than happy to tell you the things I think were wrong with the school that I went to while I was there, but it's also like been a few years and it's, I'm sure it's different now. They're really quickly evolving. So there's a lot to pay attention to.
Yeah, I love this comment from Crazy in the chat that says, nothing wrong with an existential crisis or two before you find your career. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, not all of us just wake up knowing what we're good at, what we want to do, for sure. And of course, you did your boot camp and it went perfectly and you didn't have any imposter syndrome and you nailed it, right?
Nope, felt great, never cried.
See, I'm laughing because my boyfriend loves to say that I powered through my boot camp Hackbright with tears and code and coffee. How was your experience? Because I know for me, I felt quite a bit of imposter syndrome and I didn't even know what imposter syndrome was until the first day of my boot camp. So it was a big weight on me.
You know, I think it's interesting. Like, I definitely didn't know about imposter syndrome, but I think as people, we tend to gravitate towards things we are good at, right? So I spent the first half of my life really in like the arts, things I felt like I was more naturally inclined to do. Whether or not that's true, I still think there's a lot of nature versus nurture here. Like, I spent more time in the arts, therefore I was better at them. Therefore I felt more comfortable there, you know, kind of rolling that way. But like, when I got into boot camp and started getting into it, I don't know that I felt like an imposter, but I felt like I still wasn't sure it was possible to start later. Mm. Like, I felt like maybe you have to have had a computer your whole life. Like, maybe the only way to like be really good at this is to just have been doing it and you cannot fast forward. And so in that way, it feels like it's a little impostery, but it's almost a little bit more like age and experience based. Because I knew a lot of people who like, yeah, they had, you know, they were writing basic and I was like, tell me what go in there? A disc, you say. And it's not because I'm like so incredibly baby young that I don't know what that is. I just didn't have it. So I think there's this fascinating edge of like, I didn't really feel like I belonged, but I also felt like it wasn't because like, I thought maybe this is just not how you're made.
There's a lot of vulnerability, I feel, in learning a new skill. And I was recently thinking about, I was never a good dancer. I did musicals, but I was terrible at dancing. And I remember, I was trying to remember, why didn't I just keep at it, you know? And I think that I took a ballet class and it was a beginner ballet class and I was in my probably mid to late 20s and I was the oldest person in there and it was a bunch of kids and then I never went back. Yeah. So I was like, I don't belong here. This isn't for me. But I think that's what the cool thing about boot camps around this time in 2016 was, that's what it was for me. I was like, oh, these are people like me who are making a career change later in life. But yeah, it can feel very jarring when, you know, I had to Google what STEM was. Like, they were like, yeah, who here works in STEM? And I was like, on my phone, just like, what the heck is STEM? Like, tree? Like, I don't know what this acronym is. Yes. But there were a lot of moments like that where I was just like, oh, do I belong here? Okay.
Yeah. And even like the number of people who switch over from like other sciences, can be intimidating, right? It was like, oh, well, a lot of my classmates were like chemical engineers or something that sounded intimidating to me. So I was like, oh, I am an expert in the Oxford comma. Oh, thank you. In reality, it turns out that like knowing grammar really well actually is a pretty big skill when it comes to code, because every coding language has its own grammar and like lexicon that's really important. So being able to remember those things actually really helped me be able to just like straight up type and write code a little faster.
Nice. Yeah. I have a slightly different origin story where I did get a degree in computer engineering, but yeah, I remember even those first programming classes, I had never written a line of code before. I knew I wanted to learn it. But yeah, I just felt like I was surrounded by everybody who already knew what they were doing. And I had no clue what was going on. And
yeah. You're like,
they're like, oh yeah, hello world. Pff, yeah, no problem. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a, like, there's a point static? Where you're thinking like, I can memorize a lot, right? Like that's how I was always really good at school, because I'm really good at like memorizing things. And I could memorize code and be like, okay, I know this is how I make like a REST API, but I think maybe almost until I was all the way done with a boot camp, didn't know why I was doing any of it. Right. And I think that's one of the really hard things, is because this used to happen to me in math in school too, is I would say like, well, why? Like, what is a cosine? And they would be like, you don't worry about that right now. And I'd be like, but I am worried about it right now. Right. And there was just like this brink of learning where they're like, okay, well, like your brain can't handle this other information, so you just need to do this. And I find that a very frustrating experience, although I have yet to find a solution for it. It's like, yeah, you just have to memorize this for a bit. And then once you get going, you'll start to pick up like why it's happening. But that patience is really important, but it's also like, yeah, it made me furious.
I was a why person too. I drove my boyfriend crazy during my boot camp, because I'd be like, but why is everything zero index? He's like, that's not important. It just is. And I'm like, but why?
But why? But just tell me.
I mean, sometimes the answer is just whoever made this said so. Like right. They just decided 20 years ago that we'd start counting at zero. Yes. And we still do it. It's like, okay. Moving on. Like, yeah. Sometimes that is the only reason. It's just like, yeah, whoever made C# just decided that was going to be the thing.
Yeah.
I will find a link for it and drop it in the chat. But our coworkers, Morgan Bell and Burke Holland, interviewed the person who created the first hello world, you know, that ever happened. And I believe one of the questions they asked them was like, why hello world? And it was just like, because it's just what we talk about all the time. And I love hearing those answers, because yeah, truly a lot of times when we make decisions in our programs, it's just like, because why'd you make a Shania Twain bot? Because we love Shania Twain.
Because we can.
And so Katie, I think the biggest question that I get as a former bootcamp grad is about the job search post bootcamp, which is another time in my life when a lot of tears were expelled from my face. I always like to say that the highs are very high and the lows are very low during the job search. What was your experience like as a junior developer out of a boot camp, you know, starting this new career? You probably had a resume similar to mine that had a lot of arts and, you know, literature stuff on it. Yeah. What was it like being a candidate fresh out of a boot camp?
It's kind of a wild experience. I have a hard time sometimes saying very like positive things about myself. I am really good at interviewing. Okay. Like, I'm good at talking to people. It's a skill that I have. But then they were like, actually don't talk. Just do this exercise. And I'm like, but if you talk to me, you would like me though, for sure. Do you want to try that?
We had a lot of conversations with PJ about this when he was interviewing this year, because we're right there with you. Like, getting your foot in the door is part one. Getting past the recruiting software, past the hiring manager, recruiter, whatever that is. Yeah. Talking to them is another thing, but a coding challenge is very different than the original informational interviews, as, you know, whatever it is we do, teachers, retail, things outside of technology. Interviewing as an engineer is so vastly different than any other career. I think I saw someone, Emily Kager, I think, tweet like, oh, you're a doctor. Or no, this is a TikTok. She was like, oh, you're a doctor? Do surgery right now, like on this thing that you usually don't do. Like, that's, when we put it in context, it's like, wait, what? Why are we like, whiteboarding?
You don't do surgery in your free time on nights and weekends?
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm a doctor. I get paid to do that. That's my job.
Yeah, but, I protect my hands us. On the weekend.
You're not doing 10x surgeries. You're not a 10x doctor. How dare you? But it's it's true. Like this industry, I think that was the biggest adjustment for me coming into it was my whole life. I too am like, hi, I'm a nice person. Here's my resume. I interview really well. But once I found out about this whiteboarding thing, I was like, oh no, a test.
Yeah. A test in an area that I still felt very much like, okay, if we do this together and I know you, I'm going to get there. Right. Like that's where I was at is when I left the boot camp. I was like, okay, like if I feel comfortable with this person, then together we'll get to a solution. I know that. But with a stranger who doesn't always feel like they're rooting for your success, I'm not going to get there. In fact, I am going to actively work in the other direction, whatever that is. Like whatever, when one time, I won't tell you the name of the company, but I'm sure they've changed their interview practices because at the time it was very small and it was just I think it was like the director of engineering or the CTO. And I had done a coding challenge in Go and I had learned Go just to do this. And I was like super interested in it. I was like, somebody like, I don't know. I didn't really get it, but I was like fascinated by Go. And then we were doing like, you know, you turn in the assignment and then you have like a review. And I remember the interviewer
Not intimidating at all.
Yeah. I remember the interviewer asking me like, okay, well, why did you use this technique? And I was like, it's the only one I know.
And, good answer.
Yeah. And then he would say like, okay, well, what are some other options? And I said, I don't know. And he said, just like, tell me a couple. And I was like, I don't know. Like, what do I have to do? I feel like this interviewer just couldn't stop asking me to try to dig for information I'd already told them I didn't have.
Yeah.
And like, it was so painful. I just thought like, clearly you're not going to hire me, right? Like you are looking for things that I don't currently have, but he would not be graceful in the interview about like how to set me free. It felt like he was just torturing me. He would just be like, right, but why? And I'd be like, I don't know. I learned Go for this. I was just so excited to have a working Go anything. And not only did he like, he robbed me of that joy of like having done the thing, but then like, I mean, still to this day, it's one of my worst interviews because he made me feel so bad for not knowing, which it turns out is actually a thing that people don't mind.
Yeah, so that's a great answer. That's why I try to teach junior developers is when you don't know, don't pretend, don't fake it, don't try to make it up. Be very upfront and say, I don't know what the answer is. Yeah. But maybe you have like an inkling, you can say like, yeah, I'm not really sure, but maybe we could try this. And that really just, in my experience, I've noticed that's the big differentiator between junior and senior. I mean, there's a lot of things to differentiate, but yeah, senior devs are always very upfront with like, oh, I've never done that before. like, hey, Chloe, how long do you think this project's going to take? He's like, oh, I have no idea. I've never done it before. Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
No like, idea.
Give me a week, a year? And then I'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah. Gosh, chills from the interview vault. I very similarly had to learn Ruby. My boot camp was Python and JavaScript, and I had a coding challenge that was Ruby. And I was so scared because I got this email the night before. I'd been studying Ruby up and down. And the recruiter said, hey, you know, we're so excited to have you come in tomorrow. We will be, you know, testing you and this, this, and this. And I didn't know all of these additional languages that they mentioned. And I asked my boyfriend, like, what do I do? Like, I can't just go in there and pretend that I know all these crazy languages. And he said, let them know. Like, they know you're a bootcamp grad. Like, set expectation. You can give pushback here. Like, this is, they are bringing you in. So I totally agree, Brandon. Like, honesty and being straightforward. I love that you answered it. Like, I do not know. Because what are you going to do? Like, do a Harry Potter spell and suddenly know the syntax?
I know. Still, and I'm like, still on the phone? Not screen sharing or anything. We were on a phone call and we were just both looking at my test. Right. So I couldn't even, I just was like, I literally have nothing else to give you. Like,
and I think like there's a tendency, especially with boot camp grads and juniors that they feel that they cannot be choosy with their roles, that they're like, I got to take whatever job I get first, which usually I empathize with because financially you're running out of money. You need a job. You kind of don't even know if it's possible for you to get a job. But if you feel at any point when you are whiteboarding, doing an informational interview, even a phone screen, any weird vibes culturally from the company, or just like Katie said, like, anything where you're like, this person kind of gave me a negative experience. I think it's important to say that these are things as an interviewee versus an interviewer that you can make decisions on. I always like to tell people that I mentor, it's much better to say no to a job and keep job searching for another week or month than start a job and have to do this all over again in 2 months because you're unhappy. Honesty is best.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, right? I think that, like, if you're honest with them, maybe you don't get that job, but like, I always tell people, like, you will get one. You will. Like, I firmly believe this, like, build your networks, keep reaching out to people. I got my first job because of a fellow alumni, right? Like, and I didn't know him well, or I don't think I'd ever met him before that, but he was just like in the broad network of the school and just like invited me to come chat with him. And then he was like, well, my company is hiring, so like, why don't you talk to this person, and kind of set me up on that path for success, you know? And I think, like, how you feel during the interview, like, if you are maybe like pretending a bit, like, oh, well, yeah, definitely. SQL, I hear this.
Docker, yes.
Yes, I have containers. that feeling, that's how you're going to feel every day at that job if you get it. Mm. Where you're like, oh, I actually don't know anything and I'm pretending here. Like, that's how you're going to feel at work. And it's not good and it's not sustainable, right? It feels terrible to work like that. And I'm not saying that I haven't, because maybe we all are. But it's, I think it is really important to know that, like, there are people who are already in the biz that will, like, that we want to help you, right? Like, I want to help you. I always open my DMs to, like, underrepresented folks. Like, you want a resume review, whatever, because, you know, we have to work within the system that currently exists, while it exists, while we burn it down. But, you know, while it is, and we need these, like, jobs to survive, then, like, we have to do what we can to make sure that there's room for new people.
Absolutely. And if y'all aren't following Katie on Twitter, get out your phone or computer right now and follow The Cater Tot on Twitter. Mostly because all of these positive tweets seriously are talk about being a positive force for motivation in the community. I would love to have a talk, Katie, about you talked a little bit about kind of networking, like, so to speak, and how you got this first job through someone through your boot camp. I think I got my second job in tech from my network of boot camp and Twitter. I have seen a lot of folks have gotten jobs on Twitter recently. Yeah. You're very active on Twitter, as am I. But I really love these positive tweets. Tell us, like, how this started, why you do it, and yeah, I'll bring up some examples of the joy that Katie brings to the world.
I mean, that's a good question. I think, so I have an anxiety disorder, which means, if you're not super familiar with it, it's the difference between worrying and anxiety is the amount of control that you have. So I might worry I'm going to be late, but I know that, like, I, you know, can leave my house earlier or whatever, but I have anxiety about things I cannot change. I have anxiety that, like, my dogs will get sick when I'm not home, or that, you know, some friend somewhere I haven't talked to in 10 years is, like, mad at me, or a lot of, like, more serious things too, you know, like, I just fundamentally am anxious about my existence. And it got really bad during my boot camp because it's a very high pressure situation. And once I got into, like, a working schedule, especially because I was traveling, going to conferences, I just saw a lot of people who maybe didn't have anxiety disorders, but it was clear to me that the people around me were like stressed out. And so was I. And like, there are a lot of like physical symptoms that come if you have any kind of like anxiety or depression. They come with a lot of physical symptoms. And for me, one of them is that I just get like, I get like too hot. I get really hot and like flushed. And I feel a little bit like someone is like crumpling me up like a piece of paper. And it's really hard to escape that feeling. And the key to not, like the key that I've learned through years of like therapy and medication is that like I have to have some tool to stop the crumpling before it reaches like critical mass. And one day I got on Twitter and I just remember being like, I just need a distraction. Like, I feel really bad today and I want to tell you something nice about you, because what I really wanted was for someone to just say something nice about me. You know, like the secret to be my positivity on Twitter is that they're all things that I'm not good at saying to myself. And when I put them out on Twitter, I can kind of say them to myself in this public way that I'm not too good at in private.
I love all of that. I find a lot of that very relatable as a person with anxiety myself. I love this tweet that you did the other day that says, I don't ask folks how they're doing. I say, I'm glad you're here. And then in the thread, it says, I care about how you're doing too, but it's a lot to ask right now. No matter how you're doing, I'm glad you're here. And I think especially now, asking someone like, hey, how's your year been? How are you doing? Especially as things open up, is such a loaded question. I think I tweeted the other day, you know, people, I'll be like, hey, so sorry I didn't respond to this text. I've been having like an existential crisis with the pandemic. And like, I think we're all really in this kind of chaotic headspace. But I love, like, you're tweeting out tips and tricks for like how to better interact with people. Lots of like, hey, you're a positive muffin of loveliness and things like that.
That's true.
And it's needed. We have in the chat here, Crazy is saying 10 out of 10 following the Cater Tot on Twitter. I have been encouraged more than once by her tweets. Samesies, absolutely the same. Are there any that you are like particular, you think are like the top one we should share here? I feel like there's so many good ones, Katie.
Oh my gosh. I honestly can't remember. You know, as someone who again was a writer for a lot of my life, they leave my head and then they go away.
Yes. Well, I like this one. What's your sign? Yield. Slow down.
Yeah. Just make way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, mental health in tech is an important topic that we do not talk about nearly enough in this industry. So I think I love that you have not only just this channel to talk about this, Twitter, but that we're talking about it now. I know therapy has helped me quite a bit, especially as a new developer, you know, navigating the landscape of corporate America and whatnot. Also, shout out to Ariana Grande, who just donated, I think, $1 million worth of therapy to women this week. But yeah, I love that there are more candid conversations happening out there about the importance of mental health, the importance of therapy, and just getting, especially during this chaotic time, making sure your head is in a good, because you can't write code if your head's not in a good place. At least not, I can't.
I can't do much if I'm not like taking care of myself. And sort of an interesting question that I tell people, like, so I did a conference talk about a little bit about anxiety. It was called Accepting Compliments and Other Acts of Bravery, which was, it's a favorite talk of mine, which is just like, how do you accept things you like about yourself or stories you tell about yourself that you want to be true? And the conference had a situation where they'd set up like tables in the public areas for like topics. So it'd be like, oh, this table is going to talk about like DevOps, and this one's gonna talk about this. And there was one that just said anxiety, and I was sitting at it by myself, just like, and it was like, you know, whatever. I was just like hanging out at this table, like on my phone. And then someone came and sat down, and I just remember I just like said hi. And then he said, how do I know if I have anxiety? And then we had like a conversation about it, and I was just like, you know, teardrop, like, I don't know, but you're gonna be okay. You know, like it was, if so rewarding to have someone have a moment of reflection. Like it means a lot to me when people reach out to me on Twitter to tell me that like I've said anything that resonates with them, just because, again, I'm often my tweets are kind of a form of like my own anxiety. Like, I got to get this out. I have to get this out.
And shout out to one of my favorite conferences. I think this is in 2019. 2019 Anxiety Tech. It was a whole technical conference about applications and mental health services and ways to deal with anxiety in tech. Some videos online, I think of, you know, I think I built an Azure Functions ADHD medication reminder app. So just very practical things that you can talk about and, you know, that we struggle with and deal with as developers, because we're all humans. I think. I mean, I don't think we're androids. I think.
I mean,
there's that new, what's that new GitHub thing called? Have you seen that? GitHub just announced this new thing that will basically write code for you.
Oh,
so okay. Watch out, world.
Goodbye, world. Katie, it is so lovely to have you back for part two. Of course, people can find you on Twitter. Are there other places where people can follow you on your and all your awesome positive tweets and beeps and boops out there?
You know, most of it happens on Twitter. If you're a Circle CI user, I spend a lot of time on our community site answering questions, helping people there. But I'm always happy to see you however you choose to engage. I put up educational material about Circle CI on their YouTube channel, so you can find some like technical resources from me there. But Twitter's the place. It's my jam.
And if you ever get the chance to see a live talk with Katie, Katie often does her own illustrations in her talks. Mm-hmm. So definitely make sure you check out any opportunity that Katie is speaking. Brandon, gosh, I almost want to bring Katie back for part three. Like, it just seems like we're ending this too soon.
All stories happen in a trilogy, right?
Yes. Yeah. A New Hope. Kater. The New Hope. Before we close out this session, we've got about 2 minutes here. Any words of advice to anybody out there who's similarly struggling with anxiety and wants to be a participant in the community? Because I know even for myself, that can be hard sometimes.
Yeah. I think that I'm going to be Nike about it. Just do it. I think that was the thing I wish I could have told myself a million times, is like, just click send sooner, because like, and a technique that I use that I doesn't work for everyone. So keep in mind, everyone is, you know, individual, but sometimes I chase an anxiety to the end. So you say like, okay, well, what happens if I send this email? And like, what's the worst thing that happens? They say no, the end. So like, really just remember that like, people who are interviewing you want you to succeed. Your coworkers want you to succeed. At best, you have one enemy out here.
We want you to succeed.
Yeah, we want you to succeed.
Right. Amazing. That is great advice. Thank you, Katie, for coming back. And Brandon, we still don't know how to end this show after a year. Take us out, Brandon.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you back here this week. Don't forget to check out 8bits.tv, where you can find the podcast, subscribe to all the episodes. You can catch Katie's episode from last week and all of our other amazing guests. But until then, we'll see you on Wednesday.